This is the Reynolds School Media Watch. I'm KUNR General Manager David Stipik. Joining me in the studio is the Dean of the Reynolds School of Journalism, Al Stavitsky. Welcome, Al.
Always good to be here, David.
And Al, you've brought a guest in the studio today. Professor Gregory Lowe is the Reynolds School's Media Manager in Residence, holds a position of Professor in Media Management at the University of Tampere, Finland. And welcome, Professor Lowe.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
Professor Lowe is a former executive of Finland's National Broadcasting Company, where he headed the Innovation Unit, and is currently serving as president of the European Media Management Association. He organized an international series of biennial conferences on public media, holds a doctorate from University of Texas in Austin. And Al, before we turn to Professor Lowe, what is the Media Manager in Residence at the Reynolds School?
Well, this is an inaugural program, David, with the media fields in such flux. There is a great need for effective media management and leadership. And as part of our curriculum at the Reynolds School, we have a media entrepreneurship program. We have a chair in media technology. And those areas certainly engage in aspects of media management and leadership, but we thought it would be useful to bring in someone to really focus on that area and how at this time of great change we need effective, innovative media leadership. And I think no one better on the global scene today than Greg Lowe.
Professor Lowe, again, welcome to our campus and to KUNR. I want to have you talk a little bit about the work you're doing. The RIPE initiative is one of those things, and what you share with today's journalism students and professors in your classrooms and also here at the Reynolds School.
Sure. Yeah, RIPE, it's an acronym. It stands for Revisionary Interpretations of the Public Enterprise in Media. And this started in 2000, and we've had biennial conferences every year since 2002. And the conferences have been, you know, sponsored by some of the most influential public broadcasting companies in the world, like BBC in Great Britain and ZDF in Germany, NHK Japan, and so forth. And we address kind of what is the latest problem or area of developmental concern that needs to be looked at, researched, discussed in order to help the strategic managers of these kind of companies do their development work, and at the same time in ways that could benefit academic scholarship. So it's a collaborative project. It's a way to link industry and research.
And when you're talking with students where you are in Finland, as well as here when you visit a campus like the university, what are the things that you're focusing on with the future of our journalism industry?
Well, one key need today is that most of the young people, young adults who want to, you know, have a professional attachment to journalism or some area of practice, they're really focused on the content. I mean, that's the reason you do this, right? I mean, that's the fun part, right? It's making the show, it's writing the story, whatever. It's the creative part. But the fact of the matter is, today, media systems are in great upheaval. It's a very uncertain, unpredictable market environment, and it requires a high degree of management competence in order to succeed. And I try to tell students that you need to understand that the content is also product. It has to function in a marketplace environment. It has to be attractive to at least some reasonably sufficient group of either consumers who are willing to pay for it, or at least listeners, viewers who want to enjoy that content. And it's not simply because you have a good story or you've taken a good photograph or whatever. You need to understand these relationships. So the product nature is really important to understand. Media products are incredibly complicated. I mean, it's not like a refrigerator. A refrigerator does one thing. You know, cool stuff down. But when you start talking about a media product, well, I mean, think about all the things that it does. On the one hand, for example, it's a public good. I mean, if I read the newspaper, you can still read it. My use of it hasn't diminished its value at all. In fact, if you read it and I've read it, then we can talk about it. Suddenly its value is enhanced. It is also a symbolic good, because we are talking about issues that are about our culture, about our understandings of the world, about our social relationships. And it is certainly an economic good. You know, it has to be funded by some means, either public money or commercial money, and therefore it has to be attractive as a product in a competitive market. So I talk to students about things like this, and it's interesting that, you know, actually most of them haven't really thought about that very much.
Al, let me get back to you for a moment. Why the emphasis on media management at the Reynolds School right now?
as Greg noted, this content has to be paid for. You know, it has to reach an audience. It has to be strategically planned. You know, we have some very wonderful instructors who are teaching the content and students who are turning out some terrific work. But what hasn't been traditionally emphasized as much in journalism education has been these issues of media economics and media leadership and media entrepreneurship. We know that in this very challenging, brave new world, we've got to arm our students with that knowledge as well as being capable program makers.
This is the Reynolds School Media Watch on KUNR. I'm David Stipik with the Dean of the Reynolds School of Journalism, Al Stavitsky, and the Reynolds School's Media Manager in Residence, Professor Gregory Lowe from the University of Tampere, Finland, discussing public media, media management, all things media, especially from an international perspective. Let me turn to that now. Public media is going through its own upheavals and its own challenges, funding and such. Describe for our listeners some of the global differences in the public media that you work with.
Sure. We could make distinctions between the highly developed parts of the world. That means those that have mature democracies and, despite economic difficulties, relatively wealthy economic environments. And in those countries, and that means the essentially United States, most of Europe, at least the western part of Europe, Australia, Japan, in those parts of the world, at least there is a reasonably robust presence of a public media sector. It's very strong, of course, in the northern part of Europe throughout there. And there, the challenges are often that in a mature system, a lot of people question whether or not you should have a sector that's kind of publicly funded. I mean, why can't private media do it all? And of course, it's a legitimate question because public broadcasting as a concept begins in the early part of the 20th century in a time when there was scarcity of channels and scarcity of money. And so there was an idea that media should have a social responsibility and that they should serve a function that helps to kind of improve the quality of life. You know, it's about social enlightenment and all of that. So when you talk about public media in the United States and in Europe, much of Europe, you're really talking about trying to rethink, you know, its value and articulate that value in ways that resonate with different stakeholders. So why should a government, you know, continue to support this, especially in times when economies are in such austere conditions? Why should people want to donate money and contribute to a public radio or public television system? Now, when you get to other parts of the world, in the developing world, we sometimes say, in much of Africa, in Asia, in the Latin America region, they've not ever had really a public sector in media. They've either had a legacy of state broadcasting, which is very much about propaganda and under the control directly of the government, not only regulations but content as well, or they've had some, you know, oligopoly of commercial broadcasters that had very little interest in anything other than generating revenue. And so a lot of these countries have recognized that in order to mature the quality of their life and their democratic, you know, kind of conditions as well as their economic foundations, they need a civil society sector. They need some goodwill agent in the middle, so to say, who is not going to be under the thumb of the government and is not going to be too beholden to the commercial environment either. Now, there has to be a kind of fair agent to tell, you know, as we say in court, the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So, you know, there's different conditions in different parts of the world. And the most interesting thing to observe from my perspective is how a variety of countries are going to, in a sense, reinvent public sector media in the under 21st century conditions.
And Al, I know you're a scholar in terms of public media before you've come to us here. Is there a lot of interest in public radio, public television among journalism students today?
What's interesting is we're seeing a renaissance. We are seeing increased interest among our students for public broadcasting, and I think particularly public radio. But I think what's interesting that what's driving that, David, is podcasting, is online streaming. For a lot of young people, they don't even own a radio. you know, and they do listen to the radio when they're driving around. But for them, it's podcasts, it's audio streams. But public radio is well-positioned because a lot of the very dynamic, attractive content, like the Serial podcast or Invisibilia that NPR is seeking to develop, those programs are very attractive and are bringing a younger audience in, though they may not be listening to your broadcast stream.
This is the Reynolds School Media Watch on KUNR. I'm David Stipik with Journalism Dean Al Stavitsky. We're discussing public media in today's competitive global media environment with the Reynolds School's Media Manager in Residence, Gregory Lowe, Professor of Media Management at the University of Tampere, Finland. We continue to struggle to be funded from our listeners in public radio. We just got done with our membership drive recently. And that balance between the public-private partnership where there are some government funding in that mix, but most of it's reliant on our listeners. Greg, do you see that model in a worldview differently than we see it here in the United States?
Well, everybody knows that a pledge drive is annoying. I mean, nobody likes it. I don't really think the people that do it like to have to do it, really. And I don't think most people listen to it really enjoy listening to it. But we all recognize that, you know, it's necessary. And there is a great value in doing your funding this way. And that great value is that here public broadcasting is directly accountable to the people who use it and like it in ways and to degrees that is not really characteristic in places where you have either direct state funding or an obligatory license fee of some kind. That creates, you know, a kind of separation between your audience and the people who are trying to provide services to and for them. Now, as to this question about whether or not, you know, broadcasting has a future, that's a very interesting one. And if you look at it from the perspective of kind of a purely economic analysis, the fact of the matter is broadcasting is dirt cheap. I mean, I don't mean that it's cheap in the sense that anybody can do it. You have to have a certain scale of investment. But, you know, it costs the same amount of money to reach one person as it does to reach a million people if you've got the transmitter set up. You know, all the cost is in producing the first copy of the program. After that, you know, the cost for reproducing it's almost nothing. And the possibility for people to listen to it anywhere all the time pretty much, at least as long as we're sending, means that this is an incredibly efficient means of communication on a public scale. And we need public communication. I mean, there are issues that have to be decided by people as citizens in a democracy. And there's a need for us as a society to grow in our tolerance and our respect and to recognize new potential. If all we have is an assortment of highly fragmented, very niche-oriented channels that are mainly focused on only attracting certain scale of revenue, then we do a disservice to our society, to our culture, and really to our own future. You know, whether we have a future or not, whether there is a future for funding, depends in large degree on how effective we are in communicating the need, the value, and the reasons for that.
Al, as you're working with students and faculty, what does the future look like for public media through your students' eyes?
If you look at the native digital media sector, which we've talked about on this program, I think the most interesting and significant journalistic work being done in that segment is in the nonprofit area. And some of those firms are affiliated with public media. Others are independent foundation-supported firms, but that are doing very similar things to what we have traditionally expected from public media. And as a matter of fact, Greg and I are participating in a global research project funded by the Academy of Finland that is looking at exactly that question of what is the role of public media in this new, what we're calling native digital nonprofit media ecology, where we believe there is a rich future for news.
Professor Greg Lowe, how do you see public media as a platform for this journalism student you're talking to this week at the Reynolds School?
I think young people are just as interested to talk about things in an intelligent way as they've ever been. And the fact of the matter is, if you don't have a public sector in media, then the possibilities to have an intelligent conversation, a thoughtful analysis, to really contribute in ways that can have an impact, a social impact, are very low. And the reason people, young people who decide to get into journalism today decide to do so is because they want to have impact. They want to have value. I mean, let's face it, this is a very insecure job market these days. A student who really chooses to become a journalist today, you can be pretty sure that that student is pretty committed to the ideals of journalism and to the notion that the public interest matters. But I do think that young journalists today are going to have to learn to be far more entrepreneurial. They're going to have to learn to take their career as their own management project. They're not going to be able to rely as much on organizations as in the past. And they're going to probably have to be far more focused on developing a kind of brand or profile, in other words, a kind of specialization that is attractive to a lot of people. And that means you're going to have to study, learn. You're going to have to be an expert, guys.
And you mentioned that key thing that you work with, media management, your own media manager of your own brand, of your own content,
exactly.
All those things.
Yeah. You got to manage your own career and you got to manage your own self. We teach our students that when you're a media manager, there's five things you have to manage. You have to manage people, you have to manage processes, you have to manage product, you have to manage other managers, and you have to manage yourself.
The last of which is the most difficult of all of those things.
Don't I know it.
All right. Well, we could go on and on because it's a very fascinating topic. But that wraps up today's Reynolds School Media Watch on KUNR's Beyond the Headlines. I'm General Manager David Stipik talking today about public media around the world and media management with Journalism Dean Al Stavitsky and the Reynolds School's first media manager in residence, Gregory Lowe, Professor of Media Management at the University of Tampere, Finland. Al, as always, thank you.
My pleasure.
And Professor Lowe, pleasure to have you here to work with the students and faculty at the Reynolds School. All the best in the work you're doing here and really around the world. Thank you so much.
I really appreciate that. Thank you a lot.
Thank you for joining us today, and thanks for listening to KUNR.